listeners, welcome to our third captivating episode of our podcast series entitled Beyond Boundaries, Exploring Inequality and Freedom in the Global South. My name is Vanessa Barisch. I'm the moderator of today's episode. I'm a political scientist by training, focusing on international cooperation, cultural politics, and global inequalities. We are privileged to have our distinguished guest today with us, Juan Piovani, a prominent scholar in the field of methodology of social sciences. Welcome, Juan. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
We are very happy to have you with us on the podcast today, so very much welcome. The podcast is coordinated by the Marian Center of Advanced Studies in the Maghreb, MECAM in Tunisia, and our Marian Center family, CALAS in Mexico, ICASMP in India, MESILA in Brazil, and MIASA in Ghana. We are on a mission to explore the intriguing intersection of inequality and freedom in the context of the Global South. Our objective? We're here to challenge the status quo as part of the German Year of Science, Deutsches Wissenschaftsjahr 2024, focusing on freedom. By uncovering social legacies and their effects on society, we are working towards a fairer future in the Global South. Join us on this journey as we delve into the complexities of inequality and freedom, striving for a brighter and more equitable future together. In today's episode, we will be moving to Brazil and the city of São Paulo, where the Maria Sibylla Marian Center Conviviality Inequality in Latin America, MESILA for short, is located. MESILA is one of five international humanities and social sciences centers funded by the German Federal Ministry of Education and Research, BMBF, in cooperation with local institutions. MESILA comprises three German institutions: Freie Universität Berlin, Coordination, Universität zu Köln, and Ibero-Amerikanisches Institut, and four Latin American institutions: Universidad de São Paulo, Centro Brasileiro de Análise e Planejamento, El Colegio de México, and Instituto de Investigaciones en Humanidades y Ciencias Sociales. The center fosters cutting-edge research through interdisciplinary cooperation among scholars from Germany, Latin America, the Caribbean, and beyond. Headquartered in São Paulo, Brazil, MESILA conducts activities across all seven member institutions and other cooperating entities. Today's episode explores how inequality shapes the production and circulation of knowledge in the Global South, using Latin America as a case study. We're discussing the significant disparities in resources and recognition between the Global North and South, and the impact of right-wing extremism, post-truth, and hate speech on academic freedom. We are privileged to have a distinguished guest with us, Professor Juan Piovani, a prominent scholar in the field of methodology of social sciences. Professor Juan Piovani, former MESILA director, holds a PhD in methodology of the social sciences, Sapienza Università di Roma, 2005. He's a full professor of social research methods at Universidad Nacional de La Plata, Buenos Aires, Argentina, and the director of the PhD program in interdisciplinary social studies of Europe and Latin America. He is also the coordinator of the Latin American Network of Social Sciences and Methodology, REDMET, and the principal researcher at CONICET and MESILA. Juan Piovani has published extensively on research methods and social inequalities, including books and articles in multiple countries. Welcome, Juan, to our podcast once again. Before we dive into your research, could you briefly reflect on three fundamental aspects with us? To do this, I would like you to complete three sentences with very short answers. So I will always give you the beginning of the sentence and I will ask you to complete it. So firstly, currently I'm researching?
Well, on the participation of Latin American social sciences in the international mainstream circuit and also in the regional circuits that have emerged in recent decades in Latin America and elsewhere.
Very interesting. So secondly, freedom in my scholarly exploration means?
Well, it has to do with the actual possibilities of social scientists to formulate and carry out research with adequate resources, with reasonable amounts of autonomy, and without the interferences of partisan and corporate interests, and also without the risk of threats of retaliation due to their work, their findings, their publications, and so on.
Okay, thank you. So lastly, in the context of my work, inequality is?
Well, it is related to the asymmetric conditions of knowledge production and circulation and the uneven intellectual recognition that this practice gets in different parts of the world within the framework of a global academic system that is structurally unequal across disciplines, across regions, and across institutions.
So thank you, Juan, for setting the stage. Now let's transition to the heart of today's discussion, your research. Would you mind sharing a detailed overview of your current research topic, specifically focusing on how it relates to this episode's focus on freedom and inequality, knowledge production and circulation in the Global South, using Latin America as a case study?
Thank you very much once again for the invitation. I'm really very pleased to be able to talk to you about these topics. I think that the first issue that we have to address has to do with the inequalities in the North and the South in terms of knowledge production and circulation. It is very evident that in order to carry out our research, we need adequate material conditions, apart from our scientific training, apart from our expertise in theoretical perspectives, in research methods. And that has to do with resources, with infrastructure. And we all know that in the countries of the North, in general terms, the percentage of the GDP that is provided to scientific activities is much higher than in the South. And also GDPs are higher. So that this results in more funds to support research, to support fieldwork, to hire assistants, to buy equipment, to buy relevant literature, but also to support publications, translations, the professional editing of journals. And very important today, because of the new trends in the sort of publication market, money to pay APCs, that are the administrative charges that many of the leading journals, you know, charge today to publish. Sometimes you need several thousand euros to pay for the publication of an article in those leading journals. And this that was originally meant to, you know, to provide open access to journal articles for the readers has meant for the scientists of the South a new obstacle. It's creating a new gap between the North of the South, because for scholars in the South, it's very difficult to secure the funds to pay for these charges, for these APCs. And also, these asymmetries have to do with infrastructure. For example, not always in the South, scholars have adequate infrastructure and equipment. I can give you just one example that has to do with access to international databases. In the case of Argentina, the current government, far right-wing government, has decided to cancel the contracts with the international organizations that own the databases. And this means that scholars don't have access anymore to current relevant international literature. And this is not just a mere detail. It has to do with the possibility of getting engaged with current discussions and to access literature that is relevant also to your own research. But I also want to say that these inequalities don't have to do only with infrastructure and with resources. It also has to do with the geopolitics of science, the international division of intellectual and scientific labor, and to practices like introversion and extraversion. Introversion is a concept that is used to showcase the fact that scholars in the North tend not to cite the work of the scholars from the South under the assumption that that work lacks scientific value or is not as good in scientific terms as the knowledge that is produced in the North. So there are many elements, many factors that help to explain the asymmetries within the world academic system and why the production of the South occupies a marginal position within this system, not only in quantitative terms, but also in qualitative terms. I can give you another example. For example, in the last years, the production of the social scientists of Latin America within the international circuit have increased compared to the European production. The top five countries of Europe, excluding the UK, that I tend to exclude in my analysis due to the advantages that they have for having English as a mother tongue, and the top five countries of Latin America, like, for example, 25, 30 years ago, all the production of these Latin American countries were around 5% of the production of the five European countries. And now it is around 20-25%. But the citations have not increased in the same proportion. So this means that even when Latin Americans get to publish more in the mainstream circuit, that doesn't mean that their production becomes relevant in the international scene. Another aspect that I think that is very important has to do with the fact that English has become more prominent in the social sciences. We know that in science in general, what you can call, for example, natural sciences, English has operated as lingua franca for many, many years. So scientists, regardless of the place where they live, or their origin, or the institutions where they work, they will publish regularly in English, and they will participate in events that are held in English anywhere in the world. Whereas in the social sciences, there's still debate about the role of English. Many authors think that it is becoming a lingua franca, and probably in some parts of the world, like Northern Europe, it is already a lingua franca, and most of the social sciences will produce and will use English to communicate with their colleagues, but that is not the case in Latin America. Of course, many Latin American scientists do publish in English, but local languages like Spanish and Portuguese are still very important in Latin America. And of course, this has to do with the importance that local circuits have and regional circuits have for Latin American social sciences. Previous research have showed that English is really a barrier, is an obstacle for scientists, not only for social scientists. There's a research published recently with a sample from scientists from different countries that show that many of them, when they don't have English as their mother tongue, will decide not to attend an international event because they feel insecure about their skills in English. This research has also been able to quantify the time that they need to read or write a paper, and that's much more time than what an English-speaking person will need. And also, they have been able to identify many situations in which a paper has been rejected due to linguistic issues and not to the scientific content of the paper. So this is an issue for scientists who don't have English as a mother tongue, but it is particularly important in poorer countries because in their educational trajectories, these scientists have had less opportunities to learn foreign languages and to stay in touch with foreigners, and also to visit foreign countries. For example, I have a colleague who conducts research into migration, and he has shown that in countries like Germany or France or Italy, most of the people have traveled abroad at least once in their lives. In Germany, it's over 90% of the population. And this means that Germans are more exposed to foreign languages and foreign realities than Latin Americans. Latin Americans travel less abroad, and many times when they travel abroad, they travel to bordering countries that also speak, Spanish, or a very similar language. So we have this issue with the barriers that English pose to the production of knowledge, and its publication and circulation in the global scientific system. We have conducted specific research in Argentina, Brazil, and Chile about English and how English, you know, can be an obstacle to participate in the mainstream circuits. And we have found that many times the early acquisition of skills in English, or even sometimes acquiring advanced competencies in English, do not automatically translate into more publications in English. More publications in English usually have to do with a more professionalized academic and scientific system, with assessment policies that tend to privilege this kind of participation in the mainstream circuit and the international, you know, panorama of science. And in countries where scientific systems are very professionalized, even colleagues who don't have very high competencies in English publish in English. Whereas in countries where the scientific system is less internationalized and less professionalized, and the assessment policies do not require them to publish in the mainstream circuit, even if they have good English competencies and they have acquired the skills early in their lives, they probably don't use it in their everyday scientific practice. So I think that this is also something very interesting to bear in mind. There are also many other issues that have to do with the current situation of science and social sciences in Latin America and in the world today. For example, in Latin America, we are now witnesses the emergence of far-right movements, as in Europe and elsewhere, in the US and many other countries. And this is having a huge impact in the practice of science, and particularly social sciences within the region. We had the experience of Brazil with Bolsonaro some years ago, and now in Argentina we have Milei as a president. And Milei many times, also before being elected, talked about his idea of closing the scientific institutions. And he has been particularly aggressive towards the social sciences, saying that social sciences do not provide any value to society, and therefore social sciences, you know, shouldn't get any state fund for the research. And many times in his speeches, he has focused the social sciences and also environmental sciences. And this is very, very serious, because these speeches get magnified in the social media. So these many times the scientists have been named by their full names, and then people have attacked them in the social media. Usually the idea that they have is the idea that the intellectuals of the far right call cultural Marxism. And this idea is that even though communism in Eastern Europe collapsed, Marxism is still very alive and has colonized the cultural and scientific and educational institutions in the West, changing the idea of class struggle by the idea of promoting what they call gender ideology, environmentalism, indigenism. And it's for this reason that these far-right movements tend to focus on social research that has to do with gender, with feminism, with diversities, also with the environment, also with the rights of the indigenous populations in Latin America. So this poses a big threat to freedom of research, not only to freedom of research, to the very possibility of conducting research, because their proposal is just to cut funds, but also to sort of harass social scientists and social sciences institutions. And we have had these situations in many occasions in the last months, of colleagues that have been named by the president in his public speeches and then have been attacked in the social media. And the social media, there's a lot of activity, you know, with hate speeches, with fake news, and also with conspiracy theories that focus on science and in social sciences in particular. And this, of course, in the framework of this, what we call the post-truth, that you know, is like an era in which facts are not so important anymore, and where the democratic institutions are being challenged, science is being challenged, is treated with sort of suspicion, and many times rational discourses are replaced by sort of emotional discourses. And we know this, and the impact that this is having everywhere in the world, in many, many aspects of life. Sometimes they even portray scientists as part of a transnational elite of privilege, people of privilege, that they pursue their own interest and they don't add any value to society. And this has been particularly important in Argentina in recent times. And so I will now take advantage of this example to focus more on Argentina and Argentinian social sciences. That is my field in particular, even though I've been involved in comparative research with Chile and Brazil and also with European countries, but my main focus is Argentina. And Argentina, to me, is a very interesting case because its scientific system has grown a lot in recent decades. The government, former governments, have tried to promote science and scientific institutions. But even though the system grew a lot in recent years, the participation of social scientists from Argentina in the mainstream scientific circuit have not increased as much as the system has grown locally. So I've tried to address this issue and to try to explain this phenomenon. And what we have found is that, of course, the Argentinian system is very heterogeneous, and that as that of many other countries. Many former research has shown that there are two coexisting models, where one more linked to CONICET, that is the National Scientific Council, and the other more linked to the universities. The universities tend to have a more endogenous agenda and to focus more on teaching, even though at the universities research is also conducted. And CONICET is more sort of internationalized and is more focused solely and exclusively in research. But even in this institution, we have sort of different models of knowledge production within the social sciences. Sometimes even in the career of one scientist, you can see that some of his research and some of his publications are more internationalized and are more connected to international models of science production, and others are not. So we have this situation in the social sciences in Argentina that is very particular, in which there's still a strong prevalence of heterodox models, models that do not conform to the so-called international standards in scientific practice, and more than scientific practice, I would say scientific publication. And we see that in this country, the journal article that is like the scientific product par excellence in the world mainstream circuit is very important, but there's also a lot of prestige attached to books and to other types of academic production. Also that empirical research is very well recognized, but it is in a competing position with other types of approaches that have to do with theoretical research, with normative research, with also a sort of essayistic tradition that is still very strong and that is not based on empirical research, that is like the main type of research promoted internationally. And also we see that even when we are dealing with journal articles, many times these articles are not written following the most accepted international models that have, for example, the typical introduction methods, discussion, result and discussions model. And also we see that there's still a huge prevalence of qualitative research. And this in this qualitative research, sometimes sections dedicated to methods are even less reported than in quantitative research. So in short, what we see is that the attachment to this sort of international models of academic writing is not fully accomplished yet in Argentina. And also we see, as a very interesting feature, the patterns of citation. Extraversion, as it is called, the tendency to cite renowned scholars from the North to legitimize your production. And on the other hand, other Latin Americans are not often cited. Of course, Argentinians are cited because are you know, sort of antecedents of your own research in empirical terms. But even though we have witnessed the emergence of very important regional circuits that operate within Latin American social sciences, intra-Latin American citations are still very weak. You know, like Latin Americans still tend to cite well-known international scholars from the North, from Europe, and from the US, and not so much other scholars from the South. So these all these issues, I think that pose very interesting challenges also for, and with this, I think I can finish what I was trying to say, pose very interesting challenges for scientific policies. You know, so how to deal with these things, how to increase the participation of Latin American social scientists in the mainstream circuits, how to make their production more visible, but also how to increase the relationships and the citations within Latin America in the field of the social sciences.
Thanks a lot. This was a very impressive insight on your research, I think. Here at MECAM, I think we can relate a lot also to what you said about Latin America, especially when it maybe comes to also the material conditions. We also feel here that there are similar challenges when it comes to the libraries. We also thought about trying to build like a project of like literature exchange between Germany and Tunisia, but somehow then there are also structures and limits all the time and a lot of administrative borders to this kind of ideas of making accessible knowledge to each other. Yeah, and also this the pitfalls of open access. We have discussed them in a publication workshop where we were also talking about like how everybody can actually publish in a way that it's also read and that it's quoted and so on. And yeah, we also came to this point of that like not being from a European or American university, you risk to be cited or quoted a lot less than others. Yeah, and we face of course also the same problem of English language, also the discussion, do we need to actually allow English to be like the lingua franca, or is it better to stick to French? Then French again also is a colonial language, then how we should actually communicate. I mean, we could also communicate in Arabic, but not everybody might be fluent in Arabic then, or also Arabic is perceived as a conservative language, or there are also other questions. It's always, I think, a very difficult field, but also I think it's very important not to always keep on discussing about it. Yeah, and also thanks a lot about this insight on like the political situation and the interlink between like science, especially social science in Latin America. I think we have also some dynamics like this in especially also in Germany, looking at like what can be said in social sciences, when will you get funding for which projects. It became quite clear also during the Gaza war for us that there are different different things that we can do or not do. And so Yeah, Mohammed, I can't see him. Okay, so thanks again for all this. I still have prepared four focus questions to highlight different aspects of your presentation, and I will ask them all at once, and then I will kindly ask you to address each aspect in your answer. So first, how do these disparities in the resources and infrastructure between the so-called global north and south affect the production and circulation of knowledge in Latin America? Second, what role do language and linguistic barriers play in the scientific production and recognition of social sciences in Latin America? Third, how do right-wing extremism, post-truth, hate speech, and polarization threaten the freedom of research in Latin America? And four, how do social sciences in Argentina adapt to internationally recognized models, and what impact does this have on their global and regional recognition?
Thank you very much for your questions. I think that they give me the opportunity to sort of summarize and put some ideas in order of what I have already said in my presentation. The first one has to do with the asymmetries, the north and south asymmetries in terms of resources and infrastructure. This is very important, of course. As I said before, the countries of the north spend much more money in science than the countries of the south. In the south, sometimes the governments tend to think that they have other urgencies, and they tend to see science as something that is not necessarily financeable in a country where you have, poverty and difficulties in access to education and healthcare and so on. Many times, what they don't see is that former countries with mainly rural economies that have moved forward towards more advanced economies like South Korea or Taiwan, just to give two examples, are countries that have invested heavily in science and that still invest heavily in science. So, the fact is that in Latin America, in general terms, the countries are still even far from the goal of the 1% of the GDP, for science. And this means that the colleagues in the north are more advantaged in terms of resources. And resources are an essential part of the material conditions in which you are able to conduct your work and to conduct your research. You need money for many things, and you need infrastructure for many things. For example, you need money to buy equipment, to buy literature, to pay for translations, for publications, to sort of set up local publications with professional editing practices. So you have money to pay for access to databases, to pay for subscriptions, to access current literature, and these things in the South are in more precarious conditions than in the North. Of course, there are differences within the North and within the South. So there's a sort of a South in the North, and there's a sort of a North in the South. In the South, we usually see many differences between huge metropolitan areas where you have, strong scientific tradition, institutions like, for example, in Sao Paulo, University of Sao Paulo, or in Argentina, University of Buenos Aires, and many of the Institute of CONICET, that is the National Scientific Council. And usually in those institutions, conditions and infrastructure is better than in, more peripheral institutions in the same country. But even so, if you compare with the conditions in which our colleagues from the North work, we are in much more precarious conditions in terms of infrastructure and in terms of resources to even to conduct research, the grants or the money to attend international conferences, or as I said before, to be able to pay for the APCs to publish in leading journals. And this makes a big difference because it means that in many occasions, good scientific research of the South is not able to be published in the most visible journals worldwide, just because there's a lack of money to pay for the APCs. So there's also a gap there that is very, very important. As I said before, and I don't want to repeat it now, the difference in terms of resources and infrastructure is not only the one or the only explanatory factor of the asymmetries between the North and the South. They have to be framed more in the structurally unequal condition of modern capitalism. So science is just one dimension of that. But of course has to do with the differences in terms of resources and infrastructure. The acquisition of skills in English, particularly the early acquisitions of skills in English, have to do with social origin. So there's inequality also playing its part there. Like the scientists that come from more privileged households usually have been able to acquire skills in English and have more advanced skills in English. But this doesn't have to do with merit alone, but has to do with the privileged position of their parents and the type of schools that they attended, because the schools in Latin America are very segmented in terms of quality and are correlated to social class and social capital of the families. So in short, we can totally affirm that English is still today an obstacle for social scientists in Latin America. Then you also pose a question about what threats are the new far-right movements representing for social sciences and post-truth. And I also said something about that. And really are very, very, very real threats, are not sort of abstract threats. What I mean real threats is that they, in government, they have passed legislation and they have applied policies that affect social sciences and science in general, I have to say, but particularly social sciences. They are quite obsessed with the idea that social sciences have been behind what we consider actually as an expansion of rights, but they think that this expansion of rights challenge traditional society. So for example, women's rights, gays' rights, transsexual people's rights, that many times have been backed by social science research. They fiercely oppose this sort of social transformations. And because of that, they also attack the social sciences. Many times they speak about the social sciences in general, but then when you ask and you try to move deeply to understand their thinking, they are particularly focused on these issues. Like gender, feminism, but also other issues that challenge their ideas, like for example, in terms of global warming, the environment, climate change. They are denialists of this. They don't think that they are the result of human activity, and therefore they tend to dismiss research that proves that this has to do with human activities, and we need to to put in place urgent policies to address these problems. And of course, this type of thinking that these far-right movements represent are very, very widespread in social media and have been favored by the development of new technologies, but also by the emergence of this sort of ideology that we call post-truth that has conspiracy theories against sciences as one of their main aspects. Another question that you made has to do with the particular situation of social sciences in Argentina and their sort of insertion or participation in the international mainstream circuit and its attachment to international models of science. I also said something about that. As I said, the scientific system in Argentina is very heterogeneous. So different models and types of practices and styles of academic productions that coexist. But in relative terms, if we compare Argentina to other Latin American countries, we see that is a country, as a colleague called Gilbert Galassi has written in a book that deals with the sort of the bibliometric analysis of the Latin American social science production. He says that Argentina is the case where its metrics in the international mainstream circuit less represent the strength and the variety of social science research. And we have statistics that show this very clearly. For example, in a research that I have been conducted about the five most cited sociologists from five European countries and five Latin American countries, we see that, for example, in the case of Germany, these scientists, I'm talking about sociologists, the top five sociologists in terms of citations in five different age groups, from 40 to 45, 45 to 50, so as to avoid the impact that, you know, the length of the trajectory has in the total citations of your work. And what we have found is that, for example, in Germany, around 30% of the citations of these scholars are citations of their work published in the mainstream circuit and cited by other works also published in the mainstream circuit. Whereas in the case of Argentina, this is just 1.7%. So that means that more than 98% of the citations are elsewhere. And where are they? Well, particularly in regional and local circuits. So in the Argentinian case, what is interesting also, and this has been said by colleagues like Fernanda Weigel, is that the logics of internationalization have not followed the traditional patterns of publishing in English in leading journals of the mainstream circuit. Instead, we have an internationalization model that has to do with publishing mainly in Spanish in the Iberoamerican circuit. That means journals from Spain and from Latin America that are indexed in regional bases like Cielo, Latindex, Redalic, and not so much in Scopus or Web of Science. So this is one of the particularities of the Argentinian social sciences, that the attachment to international models is sort of weaker than in other Latin American countries, even though the production of the social sciences is not weaker. For example, if we compare to countries where the system is smaller for obvious reasons of populations and GDP, like for example, Colombia or Chile, their participation of the social scientists from those countries in the international circuit is higher than those of Argentinians. But that doesn't mean that the total production of the social sciences from Colombia or Chile is higher than that of Argentina. So I think that's an interesting feature that also is interesting to address in terms of scientific policies and assessment policies of scientific practice.
So yeah, thank you also for answering these four questions, and also yeah, maybe summing up a little bit already what you have said before. I think I found your quote very interesting, where you said that our governments tend to think that they have other urgencies in respect to financing research, especially in the social sciences. Yeah, and I think also that you very much emphasized like what are the disparities between the Global North and the Global South in this scientific system. Thank you very much for that. As we near the conclusion of today's episode, dear Juan, could you condense your ideas into a brief takeaway message for our audience?
Well, thank you again. I will try to do so. I think that the most important thing to bear in mind is that science, as an integral part of the capitalist society, is also unequal in global terms. Science also has a sort of center-periphery structure, as the economy, trade, and many other aspects of our modern societies, and that these disparities have to do with very deeply rooted logics of knowledge production and circulation, of modes of attributing prestige and recognitions to scientific practice and to scientific production and publications. And as such, are issues that are very difficult to overcome and to address. And of course, this also poses very interesting challenges for policies and for cooperation in the international sphere. So from the perspective of the Global South, I think it is very important, of course, to cooperate with the North to promote science in these countries, also to show that investment in science is very important for societies and for development, as has happened in the countries from the North. But I think that it's also very important to think about how to strengthen the regional circuits, and also how to strengthen the South-South cooperation in science that is very, very weak. Because usually, the countries from the South tend to cooperate or to search cooperation with countries from the North, sometimes even unilaterally. So we need more sort of multilateral spaces to think about the inequalities in sciences and how to promote science in the South. And we also need to create the infrastructure, the regional infrastructures for the promotion of cooperations within the South, South-South cooperation for science and the strengthening of the regional circuits, and also to sort of pressurize for something that in the South is quite important, that has to do with the democratization of knowledge, with open access to knowledge. In this field, the South and particularly Latin America is far more advanced than Europe, for example, and the US, where the commercial logics of science are and the market logics of science are stronger. So I think that there's also this challenge about democratizing science, open science that has to do not only with the access to scientific knowledge, but also to the co-production of knowledge, you know, that may involve scientists from different countries working together and collaborating in the same research. So I will say that this is, to me, something very important and very challenging.
Yeah, thank you, Juan. Yeah, I think it's very interesting to think about South-South cooperations as well and regional infrastructures, democratization of knowledge. These are key words, I think, also for the Marianne Centers in general. So a big thanks to you, Juan. Big thanks. You're a professor of social science and research methods at Universidad Nacional de La Plata, Buenos Aires, Argentina, for sharing such valuable insights in the context of today's podcast. It's been a real eye-opener discussing knowledge production and circulation in the Global South with the example of Latin America and its implications on freedom and inequality with you. To our listeners out there, many thanks for tuning in. Your involvement means a lot to us. Keep an ear out for our next episodes, where we'll be diving into more fascinating conversations with top scholars in the social sciences and humanities. Who knows what we'll uncover next? Until then, take care.